This is Lovely Hurling, brought to you in association with Zest Active, your daily super supplement.
I'll get it back to Dan Shanahan. Shanahan in front of the goal, puts it over the bar.
Onto the 13-metre line, somehow he squeezed it in.
Shanahan, a great catch. He's got a man inside of Ken McGrath. Shanahan has the confidence to go for a big, big score.
Hi and welcome back to Lovely Hurling Association with Zest Active. I'm Anthony Nash, with me as always Dan the Man Shanahan. And to follow on from last week's Corkness, we're going again with Dan, unfortunately for him. And we have another, well, fully Cork man in my eyes, but I suppose half Cork, half Kerry. So we have Ireland international Sheffield United star John Egan coming on the show. So thanks a million for coming on, John.
No bother, lads. How's things?
Doing John. Good, thanks, John. Bye.
Great stuff. We were discussing there earlier that you're probably the second best soccer player in this this show now today. I actually had trial with the crazy gangs in Wimbledon back in the day.
Did you?
I got off the plane. I did as a goalie, got off the plane, and I'd say they looked and kind of said, what the hell? I'm only 5'8", 5'9", and they saw me walking off the plane. And they said to the guy beside me, who was the left back, are you the goalie? And he said, no, I'm the left back, and that's the goalie. So I was a fat little tiny goalie. But,
I didn't know you played against QPR,
right?
Did you?
Clean sheet and all, Jan. I came out under a corner and a QPR striker came in and I nailed him pure Gaelic football style. So I thought, but anyway, 5 minutes later, another corner came in and he took a yellow card for the books and absolutely panned me out like inside and goals. So that was my experience.
Who would you play for in Cork?
I actually played with Cantork. I got trials in. There was a fella that used to go around, Claude something. He went around and with the schools visiting and he saw us play a schools game and took me over to Donnerill. And then we had a fella, John O'Flynn, that played for Cork City, but another John O'Flynn that was on trial over Wimbledon. So his brother came with me. But it just gave me an idea. My parents, look, it's just a compliment to you. I think the stat was like of 200 or 300 kids that went over, I think only 1% of them made it. And my parents said to me, go enjoy the weekend, but as soon as you come home, you're going back to school. I was never getting the thing. But I come here, I was nowhere near good enough anyway. But that's the one thing I wanted to talk to you about. I needed Dan's height, actually. That's what I needed.
They only ring me Sunday morning, lads, when they were stuck. That's the only soccer I know you played. But that's
I was going to say, Dan, were you any good then, were you?
Up front, the battering ram. Just hit the ball up high, flick it on. Every Sunday morning, there's always something they're going to piss hard night, lads. Wouldn't turn up, and they'd ring Dan to turn up. So, it's great.
Niall Quinn. I say there's a bit of Niall Quinn in you, is it? Just get in the box and knock it down.
Go down, bury it, but not at that.
I wouldn't fancy marking you.
I'd be all elbows, John.
Yeah, John, what do you think then? I'd be
all elbows, John. Your nose would be busted and stuff like that. But we play locals for the crack, lads. When they're stuck for numbers, I go up for the crack. I stand in goal, I go up front, but that's just for the fucking crack. No, that's just for the crack.
Come here, Dan. If that phone call ever comes, you let me know because I have to go and watch you play soccer. But I need to see this happening. Yeah. Darrell Breen described him as a battering ram with a barbed wire hanging off him on the hurling field. So I'd love to see what he's like in a soccer field. Come here, did you watch the game? Did you watch the hurling game on Sunday, Jan?
The VAR would kill Dan.
I'd be cut off.
Imagine there was VAR at hurling.
Don't mention the war.
Yeah, I watched the game. Yeah,
Dan'd be hoping.
When was it? Sunday. It was yesterday. Oh, no, what day is
Sunday?
Tuesday.
Sunday.
Yeah, I watched it. We had a recovery session, so I came straight back. I was telling everybody inside to watch it. There was going to be a cracker of a hurling game, and sure, they kind of flew over their heads like they still don't really understand this. But I told Ollie McBurney to back Cork, all right. So I hope he backed them after extra time and not after full time.
Extra time. Jesus.
But no, it was a good game. Cork were brilliant. They should have won it.
Yeah. Do you follow it all the time over? Or you said before the show came on there, you have a lovely mix. You're a Cork hurling fan and a Kerry football supporter.
Exactly, yeah.
Do you get to watch both teams?
The best of all worlds. Yeah, I watch every game I can, really, especially when Cork are playing hurling or Kerry are playing football. I'll be quite friendly with Damien Callan as well and Connor, so I'd be always kind of chatting to them about training and about, their games coming up and stuff. So now I was straight back to watch the semi-final the other day and I was delighted, really, because Cork should be in All-Ireland finals a lot more, and it's good that they're back in one now because they've got a brilliant team, young team, few of the new lads there, the forwards, especially that Jack O'Connor. Like, I never really, you know, I didn't really hear much of him until this year, and he's absolutely exploded onto the scene. So it's good to see that too.
Yeah. No, it's great. Even like, as I said to the lads here, we did a hurling show earlier in the week, and it was just basically just I'm delighted for him because we would receive huge criticism over the years, like, you know, from the public about how soft and how we're underachieving and stuff like that. So just to hear about the positives that have come through in the aftermath of the game has been unbelievable. Like, and it's well deserved because they have put in crazy amount of work and stuff. So, and it is right. Look, I damn mightn't agree. Like, but it's good to see Cork back in Ireland finals anyway. Like, you know,
that is hurling is better when Cork are going well. Really, even the atmosphere and stuff is unbelievable. So, hopefully, they can go another step forward now and win the final. Hopefully,
any hope of making home for it now?
Maybe, yeah. If we've days off and stuff, it all depends on if we've games and stuff like that. But if I'm able to, I will. If not, I'll watch it over here. I'll try rope a few of the lads in to watch it with me, stick a few Cork Anzies on them and see.
I go on O'Connell and to be Bonesy, you know, Bonesy down there in Rochdale. Like, I want to be on to me the whole time, like, about matches and stuff like that. Like, and he's got Hoggy's jersey and his brother is going, geez, he's stone mad for it as well. It's interesting for us to see, like, when you have obviously got your own life and your work going on, would you kind of flick it on, all right, like, just to follow it? But the Irish soccer players seem to really follow it. Like,
yeah, I love it. One of my best friends, Anthony Ford, he plays for Oxford. He's a big Limerick man from Ballingarry in Limerick. Same place as Donal O'Grady. He never stops talking about Donal O'Grady. But he loves his hurling. So if there's ever a game on, especially now Cork and Limerick, like, if we're not able to get back for it, then we'll definitely probably watch that together and give each other a bit of stick. But it's good all the boys follow it. Moyler's another big hurling supporter. Obviously his dad was the manager and stuff.
I'm not allowed to talk about golf, like, you know, in this show because I've been banned from talking about too much golf, but I have a game of golf organised with Milo and he comes home right in September, so
that's the job.
Let her reach
out. I hope you've been
the way I'm playing won't happen anyway. Come here, is it true that you carry a few hurlies around in the booth?
I do, yeah. I bring him into the training ground now and again. Enda Stevens, even though he's from Dublin, he's a very good hurler. Obviously Dublin are good, that's taken nothing away from Dublin, but
I was just going to say, like, even though he's from Dublin, like, Jesus, thank God you said that.
you wouldn't associate him with hurling, like, and then he gets the hurley out and he's quite handy, so he's always on to me to bring the hurleys in. And then you try a few of the lads try do it inside as well, like a few of the English lads, and
that's interesting
lads from Europe as well, and it's funny seeing them. It's funny seeing some of them. Yeah, some of them pick it up quite handily, but then some of them are just like all over the shop, so it's funny.
Come here. We had Tomás O'Leary on the show last week, you know, and it was just, I suppose, similarities ring true with the two of you, only that obviously you chose different sports. You have a massive GA background, obviously your dad and everything like that as well, like, which is just he's just such an impact in the GA and everything like that. Like, but like, at what stage did you, when I just got Tomás to kind of tell his story of the decision when it came, like, or was it an easy decision for you, or how did it lead up to just going to play soccer?
I think, like, being from Cork and growing up in Cork, like, it's a very sporting county. Like, you play all sorts growing up. Well, I did anyway. And I never really thought about it. I suppose when I got to 13, 14, I was playing Gaelic football, hurling, soccer, dabbled in a bit of rugby, basketball, and then I just started going on trial to England, when I tried to Sunderland, Leicester, Chelsea and Blackburn when I was about 14, 15, And then Sunderland, I went to Sunderland for one, I think after the first trial they offered me a contract. So then it was kind of then when I thought, geez, I have a decision to make. I never really thought about it till then. I just kind of went with the flow and played everything, loved everything. And then as soon as, I suppose, the contract is put in front of you, you kind of realise you have a decision to make. And it was tough. Like, my mum now would have been, you know, worried about, you know, going over without doing the leaving cert and stuff. And, you know, she's from a hurling stronghold in Abbeydorney, in North Kerry.
Yeah.
So I'd say it was her big dream that I was going to play hurling, believe it or not. Yeah, so she was kind of on the pro stay side. But, you know, my dad was really pushing me to kind of do whatever I wanted to do, really. But he came over to Sunderland. He's seen the facility, he's seen, you know, the lifestyle and, you know, the kind of path I could make for myself. And, you know, he backed me, really. He just said, like, you know, I believe in you. If if you go over there, you know, I believe you'll do well over there. And I suppose I used to take his word as gospel. So I was thinking, yeah, you know, I really do enjoy going to Sunderland. You know, I got offered a couple of contracts somewhere else, but I just felt at home in Sunderland. And there was a few Irish players going over at the same time. So, yeah, it was exciting. It was a tough decision, though, to leave home at 16. I left. But once my mum kind of sorted out the education side with Sunderland, that I'd get, you know, some sort of an education over there, it was a no-brainer in my head, really. It was what I wanted to do. And, you know, I was really happy when I did make the decision to go.
And it's not even like, I spoke to Tomás about, like, Tomás played Cork, like, he was my captain at Cork Minors, like, and he played Cork Country New Ones, and he was going to become a Cork senior, like, there was no doubting that. So my kind of question to him, and it was different for him because he was able to stay at home. Like, for you, I suppose your biggest decision was leaving home, like, really, was it? More than the sports that you were leaving behind.
Yeah, that would have been the biggest decision. But I was lucky in a way that from when I was 14 and 15 and even into 16, I got to go on trial to, you know, a few different clubs. And, you know, a couple of times I went on trial, got really homesick at places, and I just couldn't see myself living there. But every time I went to Sunderland, you know, I just really loved it. I loved the people. I loved, you know, the friends I kind of made over there going on trial. And if I didn't feel that, I probably wouldn't have went. You know, if I wasn't going to be happy somewhere, if I was, you know, going to be missing home, you miss home wherever you are, but if I wasn't going to be able to be happy wherever I was going to go, I probably would have stayed at home and chose that. But, yeah, you know, I was really comfortable over there. I, you know, moved into Diggs, and I'd been staying there every time I got on trial. So it was like kind of moving from one home to kind of your second home, really, by the time I went over there. Okay. And they were really good at the family too. Like, they used to bring the family over, you know, a weekend every month or two, to kind of help you settle in and stuff. So it was good that I had that. So it was brilliant for them too. You know, my dad loved coming over and going into the training room and going to the games and stuff. Yeah, it was good.
Class.
Yeah.
Because like, that was the thing for me. Like, as soon as I left, my parents told me, enjoy the weekend. You're not signing. Like, no matter what happened, miracles happened, which was never going to happen. Like, I was coming home to school, and that was it. Like, and then when I came home, or I wasn't good enough, I was never going to make it anyway. Like, so I just decided, right, like, I might make it at hurling. So I kind of stuck that route. But Cathal Nocton was one guy that came back. He signed contracts with Nottingham Forest, and I think the main reason he came home was just homesick. Like, you know, he just wanted to be at home with his family. So especially at that age for you, it's a huge move. Like, I know it's only on a flight an hour, but still you're just not in contact with your family. So that's a big thing for you. Like, but just moving on in your career then, like, obviously we'll jump a bit ahead. Like, two moments in your life, I suppose, that have to stand out were, first of all, playing for Ireland, and second of all, like, well, not in either order, but promotion from Sheffield United and actually playing in the Premiership must have been just unbelievable.
Yeah. No, it was brilliant, yeah. When I made my Ireland debut, you know, that was an unbelievable moment. You know, you dream of playing for your country and stuff, and then to actually do it with your family and friends in the crowd is brilliant. And then, you know, getting promoted, came to Sheffield United, we got promoted. And then, you know, we had an unbelievable season in our first year, especially up until coronavirus hit. You know, we went from getting promoted in the Championship to fighting for Europe, you know, pretty much straight away. You know, I think we were fifth and sixth most of the season. So if coronavirus didn't happen, who knows where we could have ended up. But no, it was fantastic. Even last year, it didn't go our way. You know, it was a bit of a strange season with no fans and stuff like that. But, you know, to still, you know, play in the Premier League was brilliant, and it's where we all want to be. So we're trying to get back there as fast as possible.
Unfortunately, I'm a United fan, right? Dan, I think, supports a worse team. Go on, Dan.
Sorry, John, Liverpool.
Yeah.
So, but we've, like, especially, like, you know, you kind of follow on the Irish players and everything, but, like, come on, tell me, what's it like playing against the likes of them? And not only playing against the likes of them, but doing so well, because, like, there was rumours are always rumours. There was rumours that Liverpool were looking at you and stuff like that as well. And does that actually, like, what's that like, actually, for the layman like ourselves? What's the whole, like, transfer speculation like during summers, and what's things like that, and what's playing the likes of Anfield and Old Trafford like?
I think that's what it is, really, speculation. Most of the time, really, if anything kind of concrete is going to happen, they tend to happen in terms of the transfer window and stuff. Yeah, so you read loads of stories. I'd read stories about kind of, you know, the lads that I'd be sharing a dressing room with and stuff, and it's funny seeing what people are putting out there sometimes. But no, playing against, you know, you're playing against the best players in the world. It's really tough. you know, we were fantastic when we first went up. You know, that first season we were going everywhere, and you know, we were well in games. Like, no matter who we played, we were giving them, you know, brilliant games, or else we were beating them. So it was brilliant. And I think when you're in the thick of it, you know, you don't really think, I'm playing against Liverpool, I'm playing against Man City, Man United. You know, you're just kind of playing to win when you're in the middle of it. So you kind of forget about all that. But it's where you want to be. You want to be playing against the best. You know, the Premier League now has got the best players in the world, really, on a whole. So, like, the two teams in the Champions League final last year were from the Premier League, and you know, it's tough. It's not easy. You can't switch off, and you know, if you switch off, especially in my position, you get punished. And I think that's the big difference between the Championship and the Premier League, is that they're rootless, and it's a rootless league. You know, you can do as well as you do, but if you make one mistake, you know, they're ready to pounce, and I suppose that's why they're at the top.
There was huge talk there. I was playing.
It must be so hard, John, the second year then, after being so good the first year, the pressure came on, a lot of respect went to Sheffield United at home and stuff like that. Like, you know, it must have been tough for you as a team to deal with the pressure of the success you had the previous season.
Yeah, it was a strange season. You know, we lost a few players as well with injuries, and that didn't really help. And the no fans, I think, you know, it might sound as an excuse, but the no fans, you know, was a big loss for us, because we like playing, you know, in front of our hostile crowd. And
I'd agree with you on that one, Jan. Sorry, the no fans are a disaster, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it helps the underdog, like, and we were underdogs, really. Yeah. But, you know, the first year we had a settled team. We didn't have many injuries. You know, we had momentum, which is huge, especially in soccer with all the games you have. You've one or two games every week, and you know, when that momentum is broken, you know, the first lockdown came, and I think we'd won three and drew one up until the first lockdown, to put ourselves in fifth, I think. And, you know, we'd 15 games to go. With that momentum, you know, I think we'd have carried on doing really well, but the kind of momentum stalled for 3 months, and, you know, everyone's kind of back to square one, and it definitely changes things. You know, we lost a bit of momentum then, and we couldn't get it back, and that's the way it goes. You know, it's hard to shift it when you lose it.
I almost had a broken heart this summer then, like, because obviously, like, having John and even Conor Hoare and all the lads playing over, you'd follow him as a Cork person, like, but I heard an awful rumour that John was going to be tapped up by Leeds United, and I was thinking, right, well, there's one less Irish player I have to support anyway. There was massive talk around here that the Leeds were looking for you, like, and obviously as a United fan, I was kind of like, oh, look, the rumours, like, the rumour mill would be hilarious, like, the rumour mill in J is hilarious, for God's sake, let alone the Premiership, like, and stuff like that. Like, but yeah, I was playing golf with a guy, and he said, geez, yeah, what about John Egan, he's going to Leeds, and I was like, oh, stop. Because then about a week or two later, Brian Barry Murphy had been, the rumour about him going to Man City was coming up, and I was wondering, next that did come to fruition, like, you know, because obviously we had Jimmy, and I got to meet Brian, like, which is an incredible story, like, that he's now with the Man City.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. But,
would there be a tight community of you over, John? Would you be in contact with, like, with each of the Irish players at different levels and just keep in contact, or what's the story?
Definitely, yeah, you'd always keep in contact, and sure, you're kind of playing against each other most weeks, you'd always be playing against someone.
Two sneaky points.
When the time is right, yeah. When the time is right. No, you can't beat that too. It is good. Like, the lads are very good for keeping in touch, and you know, when you're playing against them and stuff, if you have a chance to stay down or if they have a chance to stay up, you know, it's good to stay up and have a few cheeky pints.
You're listening to Lovely Hurling, association with Zest Active.
Just taking a sneaky points, like, and stuff.
Yeah.
You come home to Ireland every summer, and obviously you've got friends in Bishopstown and place around as well. Like, do you love coming home and love staying in touch with home?
Yeah, I love it, yeah. Can't get enough of it. Don't have enough hours in the day when I'm at home to do everything I want, but it's still good. I always go back to Bishopstown GA, go up there, have a puck around, take a couple of games, and if I can, head down to Kerry. Actually played a golf tournament there this year. They do a John Egan Memorial for my dad every year, so yeah. I got to meet up with all of his old teammates as well, you know, stuff like that is cool. And
they must have some stories, John.
It's good to do as much as you can.
They must have some stories, but I just couldn't crack.
Yeah. Ah, some crack, yeah. They were playing
Dan and Togo for that.
Put me down there, John. Boy.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I'll drive the all yoke there. Go catch on the bus.
You're more than welcome. Yeah, you'd love it, yeah. No, they're brilliant, like, you know. They
enjoy themselves, John.
Yeah, definitely. The success they had and the crack they had was unbelievable, especially back in the day before social media and stuff. You know, they were able to jet off anywhere and no one would have a clue. So it was the fierce crack.
We're here promoting the show on social media, yeah. But when you're out for a few pints, all right, yeah, you prefer if it wasn't around. Like, yeah. It must be cool, yeah, like, kind of having, like, connections at both sides of the border in as well, like, because we were actually discussing before the show, like, that, like, as a Kerry footballer, like, it's just, you're an absolute god down there, like, you know what I mean? Like, and it's like, it was the same, like, when Cork hurling was going great and Kilkenny hurling and all that and Waterford hurling, like, that, like, you're put up on a pedestal, like, you know, so having the connections with both camps there as well, especially that team that your dad was with, like.
Mm. No, it's class. Like, I remember going to Munster finals since I, you know, as young as I can remember, 4 or 5 probably. And just seeing the way my dad was treated down there was crazy. It became normal for me, you know, as a kid to see it. But now when I look back at it, you know, I'm kind of getting older myself now and I see, like, the things that used to happen. Like, we'd be walking up to Fitzgerald Stadium and, you know, the game would be kicked off 10 minutes and he's still there being dragged around talking to people. You know, the crowd around him wanted to talk to him and stuff. It's amazing, like, and it's only kind of when you get older, like, you realise, you know, how much of a legend he was and is to the people. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So and come here, when you were growing up then, like, which was it? Which was the biggest lover? Was it 50-50 hurling and football? And was there any players from either camp that you kind of grew up idolising or...?
It was a strange one, really. Like, I loved Gaelic football. That was probably my first love. I absolutely loved it. But then, you know, I obviously started playing soccer a lot and hurling as well. Hurling just absolutely took over, I'd say, from the age of about 12 onwards. I wouldn't go anywhere without a hurley in my hand. And then I started getting on the kind of Tony Forrestal teams. And then we played, I think it was an under-15 Munster championship we won down in Carrigaline. And that absolutely took over then. You know, I just had a big love for it. My mom was buzzing, you know, she it's her dream to see me win an All-Ireland in hurling, like, even with Cork, where my dad was kind of saying, get over to England before you put the Cork jersey on, kind of thing. Like. But I loved all three, really. You know, I loved playing soccer too. Played with Greenwood and Toker, like, so I'd have played with Bishopstown in hurling and football, and Greenwood, who were based in Toker, where the Bears are. I'd have played soccer. Yeah. So I'd be playing soccer with Greenwood in the morning. Damien Callahan would be in goal for us. And then we'd play the Bears then at about 4 o'clock that day. And I'd be full forward, he'd be full back. And he'd be absolutely trying to end me. He'd be like Zorro, like that, trying to clean me out. Yeah. And then
I used to be trying to calm him down in matches, for God's sake.
Yeah. So we'd have a falling out then in the game. He'd probably be moved off me because I'd be doing a bit too much damage. You can tell him that.
That'll go up in the Instagram stories now. We'll tag Dave underneath it. Egan cleans out Cahalan for a 10-point.
we had some good battles, but then he'd be staying in my house or I'd be staying in his house then that night, so we'd have to make up then after the game. And it was good fun though. It's good to look back on, like, some great memories.
Yeah, it's cool. It's actually gas, like, because, like, I got to meet John Murphy, who just turned pro there. He would have played golf Walker Cup from Kinsale, right? I actually met him and he was playing with myself and Brian Corker in the game. And, like, I was so nervous playing with this guy because he's going to be a future European Tour, hopefully PGA Tour winner. But the man idolized Brian Corcoran in hurling, do you know what I mean? Like, he was just, like, so when I'm talking to a professional soccer player here, like, and you're kind of going, like, when you were growing up, it probably was J players were your heroes, like, you know, as you said, and, you know, just to see you come back and just the love you still have. Andrew there, the producer putting in there, who was a better hurler, do you think, Shane Long or John Egan?
Do you know what? I've heard Longy is really good, and I've had a lot of chats with Longy about hurling. He actually played a minor All-Ireland final, actually, did he, for Tipperary?
That's right. That's right. Did he win? Yeah. He was tipped to be the next Don Kelly.
Yeah,
he was tipped to be, like, an unbelievable player. Like, you know, he was supposed to be an awesome hurler. I actually never seen footage of him, but just talking to fellas from Tipperary that I would have hurled against and said that, like, he was a huge thing. Because I said that to Tomás last year, like, or last week. Like, there's yourself, right? There's Tomás O'Leary. There's the two O'Halpines. There's Myler, would have played with Cork underage. I think there was two or three more players. Darren Sweetenham, like, who was playing midfield for us in Cork hurling. Like it's just, it's amazing.
Conor Horan was a good hurler. Very good hurler.
Was he?
Really good,
like,
for Bandon.
That fellas there, like, it was just, it's just something that's amazing that, like, a lot of you that have gone on to be successes in other sports, how it all kind of, I wouldn't say started with or you grew up with the GAA. Was it something that you think has strengthened it? Because we actually were lucky enough to meet Roy Keane, right? Back in 2006, I think, and I had a pain in my neck from just staring at him. Like, I was just, the lads were going for 3 in a row. I just had to join the panel, and he came in to talk to us. I never knew he was coming in, and he was my hero. Like, he was just, I'm a United fan. But he spoke about, like, that as an Irish person, he'd pick up an injury and he'd go through the pain barrier while he'd think he was sitting on the bus one day, and was it Van Nistelrooy said, well, I'm not playing the next day because I have a knock. And he's like, what do you mean you have a knock? You can play through it. Like, do you find that the GAA would have kind of strengthened you or helped you or...
100%, yeah, 100%. Just gives you a different upbringing, like, you know, that sense of community, and you have to play for the team, like, where you're from, you know what I mean? It's a very different world here, like, with all the transfers and stuff like that. And I try to explain that to people, and, you know, they do think it's really cool. But yeah, it gives you strength too, I suppose. When you're playing GAA underage as well, you're always kind of playing 2 years ahead of you, so you're playing against stronger lads as well, who aren't afraid of cutting you down to size, you know what I mean? So it's definitely a lot more physical than soccer. So it prepares you, and it prepares you mentally too, because, you know, you're training 7 nights a week when you're playing all the sports, and, you know, the GAA training tends to be different to the soccer training. And when you tie the two in together, for me anyway, it was perfect. What I did in GAA kind of helped me in soccer, and even underage, what I was doing in soccer was helping me with GAA. So it was the best of both worlds, really.
And just, what's the main, like, you know, you'd hear the similarities between GAA and soccer, and the, you know, I suppose the differences between professionalism and everything like that, then as well. Like, what's the one noticeable difference that you find from, like, your friends, as you said, with Dave, on your friends, lads, who you'd be kind of in contact with, like, about the county training being 5-6 nights a week versus what you have?
We chat about that a lot, and the one thing I always take away from it is the rest. Like, we probably do the same amount of training. Sometimes we might do more. Sometimes, you know, the GAA teams might do more, but we get to rest. You know, we train hard in the morning. We might do a gym session in the afternoon. Then we get to rest for the day. Whereas, you know, a lot of players are going to work all day, you know, going to college all day, and then, you know, train, and then probably get home late, into bed, up, do it all again. Whereas, you know, we get to kind of rest up any afternoon we want, and it helps the body. Like, you know, when you put your body through all that training and stuff, you know, it does help. And we play a lot of games too. We probably, like, we could be touching 50 games a season this year now, 46 league games and, you know, cup games and stuff. Whereas, like, in the GAA, it's probably more training than games. So that's probably another thing. They're probably the two things I take away. Yeah. So, no, there's a lot of similarities, but the one big thing I think that the difference is we probably get to rest more than the lads do. Like,
yeah, no, it's just funny because even Dan was mentioning earlier in the show, like, with us, that like Watford played 4 weeks in a row, like, and just the recovery that, like, it was, their bodies were obviously sore and stuff like that. And as you said, some of them are getting up going to work on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. That's why it's one of the reasons I became a teacher. And I was only a goalie, so I didn't need that much rest. Like, I just needed just time off.
Just recovery, like, it gives your body a chance to recover. Yeah. Like, if we play Saturday, Tuesdays, like, you know, our training is totally based on recovery and load. Making sure we don't overcook it. Like, whereas, like, when I was growing up, like, my dad managed Bishopstown. He managed a few teams, but when he was managing Bishopstown, I was kind of at an age where I could take stuff in, and, you know, they'd play a championship game and then I'd be saying, when's the next game? And he wouldn't have a clue. Like, you know, he'd be like, I don't know, could be any time. So they don't really know what they're training for. You know what I mean? So
that's changed, actually, the GPA. The GPA came out actually years ago. I remember they asked what the players want, and we said we wanted more games. What happened then is you got fired into Watford Crystal in January and fucking Mallow and it pissing and howling rain down on top of you. Like, and we're kind of going, well, look, to be honest, we want more games, but not games in the winter. Like, so I think the split season is great. I think we should be hurling through the summer and stuff like that for clubs and everything. But I do think it's something that, like, it's just like we train to train at times. Like, you're training for 2 to 3 weeks, like, and then
But I think it's something that has...
Plus, no, lads just go and flake the shit out of each other now next week back to club games. Do you know what I'm saying to you? The level of training at club will come level of training at club will come down compared to the county setup. Like, they're back now killing each other. Like, you know, so that's another 4 or 5 weeks in a row as well. Like, you know, so it's weakening unfair on the bodies. Like, you know, and John was saying that the recovery is key now as a professional. Like, you know, so it is.
And come here, John. Just last question, just to kind of let you go, you know, go back training. But like, is there any kind of, you know, like interesting thing with management over in the soccer, or similarities or differences here? How does it work in the GAA? Like, you know, you have the managers here in the GAA, like pinning pictures up on the wall, telling you go up and drive through. And you have some managers here in the GAA, and they'd be just like, look, you know, go and try your best and whatever like that. Like, what's the story in professional soccer? Like, is it more the coaches, or how does it work? Or
it's funny, like growing up, you know, I'd be watching the match of the day in Premier League, you know, following it all, thinking they're on TV, like, you know, they must be like, they're not humans, you know what I mean? But then when you come over and you're in the world, it's just like, you know, people are people. You know what I mean? It's very similar. Like, you have different characters everywhere. But, you know, me going out playing for Sheffield United, you know, you probably see a lot similar for you going out playing for Kanturk. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, people aren't robots, really. People are all just human beings. They just happen to play football or play hurling, or, you know, be a football manager or be a GAA manager. So that's one thing. It's quite cool just to see, like, the kind of, the more you go on, how normal everything is, and how alike GAA is to soccer in some ways. You know, some managers are very like GAA managers back home, and it's good as well. For my buddies would come over a lot, you know, and they'd meet my teammates, and, you know, they're just not like, they can't get over how normal some of them are and stuff like that. So it's cool.
Who's the Davy Fitz of the soccer world, son?
Oh.
Who's the Davy Fitz manager?
I actually don't know. And
have you ever come across a manager on the sideline? Like, have you come across any manager on the sideline like that's really kind of just like excitable? Or
the Wickham manager is really excitable. I remember we played him in a pre-season friendly. I was at Brentford. Actually, it comes to my head straight away, and like, some of his shouts and stuff were like, I was just thinking pure GA. Like, he was chucking down the touchline. He had a pair of shorts on and a pair of socks rolled down. And he was screaming at a fella to get at me and all this like that. And Gareth Ainsworth, I think his name is. He's done really well for Wickham. But he'd probably be the closest, I think, I've seen.
Yeah. Come here, predictions for, I suppose we can't go predictions just for hurling with your background. You have to give us a prediction for both hurling and football, all Ireland. So I know what you would love to see. You'd obviously love to see Kerry Cork win. Yeah. But how do you think both all Ireland's are going to go?
I suppose we'll start with the hurling. I think it'll be a tough game for Cork. I'd love to see Cork do it. I think Croke Park suits them. I think they'll give a better account to themselves against Limerick this time, no doubt. You know, I think they probably came up a bit too short for their liking the last game. But no, I think it'll be close. A lot of people, you know, are probably saying Limerick have it done. Anyone I've spoke to think, oh, Limerick. But I like to look at the Cork forward line. You know, the pace they have and the wide open pitch in Croke Park. You know, people say it might be a cliche, but I think it definitely suits Cork. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see another extra time. I'll go with a draw on the hurling, I think. And then after that, who knows? And in the football, I'd love Kerry to do it. You know, I really hope they do it. I don't want to jinx them or anything. But the Dubs are a powerhouse. They both have semi-finals to get through first. So, you know, providing they both get through them, I'll go Kerry.
I think the neutral wants to see
Dublin and Kerry. Cork and Lerner, Kerry Dublin. My God, what a weekend.
Yeah. That'll be incredible. So we'll go Cork after extra time in the hurling and Kerry in the football.
We'll have to get onto all GA there. No, we'll have to get it put on a charity bet for John Egan. We'll have to send it on. We'll have to try and do something like that now. Yeah. If we don't do it after it comes up. Yeah. John, look, thanks a million for coming on. I knew before the show from just having with mutual friends that what a gentleman you are, and Down Tork fellow you are as well. So it was actually great to have you on. And it's just interesting, especially for the people listening in, just to kind of see the similarities that you've had, because you've experienced both at a good level. Like, you know, as you said, you were playing for Cork before you left, and then obviously playing in the Premiership as well. And playing for Ireland is just like, it's like, and that's why I'd be a guy. I'm looking here at the TV screen watching you play soccer, and that's why I'd be interested in asking you about it, because, like I said, it's literally like, you know, a huge world over there with that you're in the bubble and you just make it feel like it's just a norm. So listen, thanks a million for coming on. Really appreciate you giving up the time. And look, we'd love to see you back in the Premiership, and there's no doubt that you'd be back there
with Liverpool. With Liverpool.
And look, you might just leave one or two dodgy ones. Yeah, dodgy ones in against United, and then we'll really be happy enough with that.
No, Waller, thanks a million for having me, lads.
Thanks.
Thanks a million.
No, thanks, John, boy. Thanks very much.
Take it easy. No worries, mate.
We'll have to get a charity soccer match. I think we actually have to get a charity soccer match. Dan Shannon up front and John Egan, and I'll be in goal kicking it up, and it'll be pure Packy Bonner. Like, I'll be just running up and hoofing it down the field.
I'll have to wear a helmet.
So thanks again to John, and from all here at Lovely Hurling, I'd like to thank you for coming on. John is also an ambassador for Zest Active. We'd like to wish him the best of luck for the rest of the season with Sheffield United and Ireland, and hopefully he gains promotion back into the Premiership. Tune in again next week. We'll be previewing the All-Ireland Final. We're going to have two special guests coming on for a special All-Ireland Final show. And again, if you can jump on any of the platforms, either on Spotify or the iTunes podcasts, and also on all GAA's TikTok or Instagram page, and keep the support going. And any messages, again, or any questions you'd like to have, feel free to throw them into the inboxes there on all GAA, and we'll deal with them next week in the show. So look, thanks again to Dan and John for being here again, and we'll see you next week.
Get it back to Dan Shanahan. Shanahan in front of the goal, puts it over the bar.
Anthony Nash to. Onto the 13 metre line. It's on goal. Somehow he squeezed it in.
Shanahan, a great catch. He's got a man inside of Ken McGrath. Shanahan has the confidence to go for it.